This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagelin. You've got Corey Majors, the famous Mike Bassick, and the soon-to-be-famous Alec Medford. Gentlemen, how are you? Welcome to the program.
I'm doing great today, Kevin. I rested for the first time in about 6 days.
Because it was the Sabbath?
No. No. I'm sorry. That's not my approach there.
Okay.
But
I was just checking.
But I have no problem with people who do approach it that way. I for some reason was able to sleep last night. The last few nights I haven't been able to, but you, on the other hand, you're struggling a bit today. 877-881-1053 and on the YouTube and Twitch, if y'all can just send Kevin some love and some messages of encouragement, his energy's a little low. All right. His energy's going to be a little low. So we're going to have to figure out ways to get him all excited today. Excite this man.
Human touch.
All right. Touch is a huge exciter.
Not for me.
Long hugs.
Long hugs are effective.
I don't want a long hug.
You might not want it, but after you're done, you might go, you know what? I needed it.
Yeah.
That feels like a tough argument to be like, hey, I know they said they didn't want a long hug, but I could tell they needed it.
Yeah.
You shouldn't do that.
I was listening Friday, and I don't know how long I want to give you a hug with what you got hiding down there.
Yeah, jeez, man.
Did that had to win, right? Your thing had to win.
Yeah.
Alec, do you remember what won?
I hope he does not still have.
Oh, I can go find that.
Yeah. Son of a gun.
Yeah. So that's the only thing I'm asking today is if the Tolos can just keep Kevin in their thoughts today.
Hey, the Cowboys are back, Kevin.
Okay, let's go. It's not because of that. Is this the part where I'm supposed to say?
You can if you want.
Look, I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. But I was very happy in the moment that the Cowboys won. I heard what Sean was saying, and I understand big picture and the understanding and everything like that. It's not great. But in the moment, I was like, oh, my crap in hell, what just happened on the long touchdown? And then when he missed the extra point, I was like, what? I was there.
The Turpin moment, Kevin, was whenever I went, what the hell is going on?
And my wife asked myself. No, that's not what happened.
My wife comes in from the grocery store, and she goes, oh, are the Cowboys being stupid again? Because that's what she's said for the last 5 weeks.
What
and
a
I
great
was like,
question that
I
is.
I said, no. Well, yeah, I don't know exactly what the Cowboys are doing right now. They're trying to win. And again, I'm dead serious when I say this. I don't know exactly who tanks appropriately whenever you're going through the tanking process.
The Giants.
Okay, the Giants. And they're just a miserable franchise right now. Right. The Cowboys are stuck between some people want to be good and some people are
they're not good enough and they're not bad enough.
Exactly.
So that is an unfortunate thing. And the thing about the game yesterday, it was a boring game most of the way. But then we got what I feel comfortable describing as the drug-infused final 187 seconds. Do you think, for people who didn't see, do you think that is an accurate... I just want to point this out.
It's unexplainable.
It was 20-9 with about 3 minutes and 7 seconds left. The final score was 34-26.
I think you're being nice saying it was 20-9 because it was really 13-9 with about, and then you had the nice touchdown pass.
Yes, a couple minutes before that.
Won the game. I looked at my son. I said, well, the Cowboys won.
The 31 points in the final 3 minutes and 30 seconds are the second most in the Super Bowl era.
The second most?
Including playoffs. So, and I don't know what the first most is. I'll have to go find out, but that's the second most in that span of time at the end of a game. So we've never seen anything like it except for once.
Okay, so here is exactly what I wrote. The wild drug-infused final 187 seconds of Commanders-Cowboys. So we're going along to Mike's point. Schoonmaker, who was awful on field goal protection and extra point protection, he gets a catch to make it 20-9. And there's this discussion about do you think maybe you should have gone for two and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, that's not going to come up. And then...
You're right. You're totally right about that. I didn't even think for two because you're at home. That's the first thing I thought was get the points and just wait it out.
So then we start with Jaden Daniels. Takes the snap at about, I believe, 3 minutes and 7 seconds. And then you get this.
He's in the gun. Snap back. Wants to throw. Rushed. Throws it out in the end zone. Caught by Ertz. Touchdown, Washington.
All right. So they get the two-point conversion. It's down to 20-17. And that point right there, I don't know where you were with this, Corey, or I don't know where the Tolos were with this. I was thinking, okay, this has entertained me in the last part, but they can still figure out a way to lose.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
not with Turpin.
Yeah, and protect and protect the draft pick. But to Mike's point.
Wait, can I ask real quick before you play this highlight? What did you think in that 1 second that he fumbled the kickoff?
This is exactly what you needed. Sorry, Corey. I don't know if that's what you're going to say. This is exactly what you needed because I was like, he's going to get to the 12. They still have two timeouts. They're going to get the ball at, you know, the 40, maybe the 35 with 2 minutes or so to go. And you're going to be back in business. And then credit to Gavonte Turpin. Not credit to him for dropping the ball, but credit to him for a video game-esque spin move that shook
that was insane.
The foundation of three commanders. Like, they were like, the hell just happened? So give me cut number 7. And because, like, you think, though, this would be the apex of craziness. It's not.
And now Turpin fields the kick. Deep dances and running it out. Left to the 30. To the 40. To midfield. Turpin's got the Jets going. 10-5. Touchdown by the league's leading kickoff returner. And everybody's hanky is in its pocket.
I just want to point out, you're with that the last stretch here. Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Field goal, punt. Touchdown, touchdown, interception.
Yep.
To start the game, block field goal, field goal, miss field goal, miss field goal, fumble, punt, 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 interception, punt, punt, field goal, end of half. And that's what the game started as, 3-3.
And repeated conversations about, was this the worst special teams game ever seen in their life? All right, so it's over. The game is over. 27-17, game's over, you're going to win. Or so you would think. The Commanders, and I didn't have an issue with
it. Was over. The Washingtons didn't get to 27.
That is a great point. So you think, I would have thought that Washington would have gotten a little closer for the field goal because they just spent all this time talking about, like, oh, hey, he just came back and they're terrible at kicking it from 50 plus. So they make the field goals, 27-20. Dallas quickly turns the ball over, or, you know, three and out, punts it and everything like that.
By having Cooper Rush run around in the backfield a lot. Like, that was going
to
help.
I'm not going to lie. That second down play, I was like, that's good. Just run off to the side and just stay in bounds. Like,
just
that's fine.
Stand there for a second.
But again,
I've seen OU do that before with a punter in the end zone. He just ran back and forth at the end of the game until the clock ran out.
But you're good to go, right? That Washington got out there 14. And so the game, again, for like the third time, feels like it's over. The first freaking play. What happened? Well, cut number 8 happened. Corey's guy happened. And it was, look, it was pretty amazing. I was upset at the time, but it was pretty amazing.
All right, first down, Daniels back. Little pressure. Throws it deep down the right side. Caught. McLaurin, 45. He's running away. McLaurin's going to score. Down the right sideline. Ran away from everybody. And with one play and 21 seconds left, Terry McLaurin went 86 yards.
Now, we're definitely, almost definitely, going to go to overtime. I'm telling you.
I needed those fantasy points, by the way.
I told my son, I'm 50-50 he makes this extra point.
Really?
I really was. I get that he made the 51-yarder to give them the chance to cut it to 7, but I was just like, this dude just looks like he's going to miss it. And I was 50-50 on it. I'm like, dude, I'm telling you.
He missed it by a lot.
I know.
He has that look about him.
He just looks unconfident. It's kind of like when, I don't know, Eric Dampier went to the free throw line. You could just see it in his face. He was like, I'm going to throw it up there and hope for the best.
So Mike turned out to be right, because we go to cut number 9. Now I've quickly reset. I mean, obviously, football broke my heart on Saturday with an unnecessary overtime game that the team I was rooting for lose.
Man,
and so I'm like, I reset. And I was like, okay, this is like when Marcel Reed dropped the ball. I was going to say the fumble. Dropped the ball. All you needed was a first down to run out the clock and end up being 2nd and 17, and we had to give the ball back. But instead, let's go to cut number 9. And believe it or not, this is still not the craziest last thing that's going to happen.
And the kick's away. And the kick is wide left. That came off his foot going wide left.
It looked bad from the beginning. All right. Now I know what you're thinking.
Did you think when they scored the long touchdown that it didn't even hit my mind they should go for two? I'm 50-50. No. I'm really 50-50 on if they're going to make the extra point. But in my mind, I never thought they should go for two because this dude's a 50% extra point kicker.
I didn't think that because we've talked about that. I mean, I feel like the last few weeks we've had these situations pop up a lot.
Yep.
And it's, if you're on the road, go for it. If you're at home, just take the points and let overtime work itself out. But I was not thinking that at any point. But I'm betting Dan Quinn was probably going, I got to trust my guy here.
Yeah, and like, you're the home team. You're the better team. I mean, looking back at it now and looking at the kicking struggles they've had most of the season, that makes sense.
That was a terrible snap.
It was.
I blame all of that on the snap because it's at that point, the kicker, he's running into it and he sees the ball's kind of laying weird and he's like, he starts to pull, he starts to change everything in his mechanics.
I don't know if you guys felt this way as well, and I know we'll probably get into this later, but the Brandon Aubrey missed field goal, not the block one. I thought the missed one was a product of protection breakdown again and he had to alter. He was like, well, this is about to get blocked again if I don't change it up. All right. So now it's 27-26. And again, for like the fourth time, the game is over. I understand football logic says when you get the ball, you go down so as to not give the ball back. But when my guy Wanya Thomas picked it up,
your guy,
I did not argue for football logic. I was just like, go, baby, go. Let's play cut number 10. And then this was almost pretty much the end of the game.
Seibert booms it to the left. It is covered, and Thomas running it back. Wanya Thomas with the Cowboys' second kickoff return for a touchdown in the game. This game is drunk.
Now, you could You could see a mix of excitement, and it felt like McCarthy and others going, hell, dude, slide. Like, we're going to win the game for sure.
Yes, you could. But on the sideline, I was looking at him because he was kind of like, well, I guess you just lay down and just let the clock run out and everything. But, hey, man, Wanya, you get a chance. Look at, again, Terrence Steele.
Yep.
Tyler Guyton.
Yep.
All of those guys want their chance to shine.
Look.
And on the two-point conversion, wasn't that Wanya Thomas? He's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah. And he was like, I was supposed to seal that off. Micah, like the play barely crossed into the end zone. Mike turns around and he goes like, what the crap in hell, dude?
You're not supposed to do that!
So everything in my being is like, okay, this time it's really over. But then I remembered in the last time that the Commanders needed but one play to go 86 yards. And I'm like, all right, it's 34-26. And Washington had a ho-hum first play. And then they get the Hail Mary opportunity. It falls short. The Cowboys win 34-26. I cannot overemphasize this enough. I understand all the time when people are like, hey, I stopped listening or hey, I stopped watching during the game. If you missed the last 187 seconds or to Mike's point, the last 5 minutes or so, you missed just an unbelievable ebb and flow from what otherwise was a terrible game.
I think that I described this perfectly when the game ended with my text with you guys. That was the best, worst game I've ever seen.
That's fair. Because going into the fourth quarter, it was 10-9 after the Cowboys already had a field goal block, a punt blocked, a missed field goal. Washington missed an extra point. It was horrible.
Like the Terry McLaurin play. I guess it's awesome on Washington's side. You can't be more stupid than the six guys that are defensive backs there. Just like, They didn't even touch him.
They made a tunnel.
They didn't even touch him.
They made a tunnel for him to run through.
That is pathetic. But it's exciting. Like,
it is.
But like, how pathetic was that?
I'm with you.
The pathetic miss of an extra point. Just like there was, how pathetic are you to, one, Dan Quinn, he can take a lot of heat. I know it was a crazy finish, but why are you kicking to Turpin there? What are you doing?
I don't know. I thought that at least three or four times in the last few minutes. And from the 817, I just fundamentally disagree with this. We'll have this conversation another time, I'm sure. The draft is a coin flip. You never know how players will work out, so let them win. There's no difference between pick 6 and pick 12. There absolutely is a gigantic pick between 6 and difference between 6 and 12. And if you don't think there's a difference player-wise,
especially if you're good at drafting.
Yes. Then you can trade down and pick up other draft assets and pick up another player or two. And from the 469, Kevin, just remember, Peace Thon is 2 days away. I'll be listening. I'm excited very much. We've got Buffalo Wild Wings in Addison tomorrow. We've got Peace Thon on Wednesday. It is a humongous week. None of the reason I'm tired or anything has anything to do with the radio product or the Dallas
Cowboys.
It's
his kid. It's his kid.
It was the Mavericks. He's all disappointed. They went to overtime and blew a 2-point lead late in the game.
Derek Lively got behind on the switch.
Yeah.
Maybe that was always going to happen against Butler.
Great effort, Mavs. We'll talk about you sometime.
With a KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we could talk some more Cowboys, but also from Vikings to Bears to Chiefs to Panthers, Washington and Dallas. Dallas was far from the only wild game of the day. Let's do it next right here in the Fan.
They are going to blitz, rush to the end zone. Caught over the shoulder. Schoonmaker to the post. Touchdown.
KNC masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. That was the touchdown that set in motion a chain of events that, as we discussed, turned out to be just the craziest ending to that game. And did you say watch out, Witten?
Yeah, Jason okay. Witten's in trouble.
Okay. And the record
books? Because McCarthy's staying around? Is that what you're saying? Or?
Maybe. But also, by the way, Jason Witten's school played Bishop Lynch in playoffs, and from what I was told, it was something like 60-7 at halftime. Jason Witten's team was winning. Frisco Liberty, I think that's who he coaches.
Okay.
I think that's who it is. But
or is it?
I could be
Argyle
wrong.
Argyle Liberty Christian?
Look it up.
Okay, I'm going to go.
Alec is saying
I'm going to go with that, because it is a TAP school. So, yeah, I'm going to go with that.
But Scooney finally paying off that second-round pick. Here we go.
Okay, I'm telling you, though.
Just needed a new quarterback to get him going.
He was one of the people that got that field goal blocked, if you look back at that protection. He had a rough day from that perspective, but that was a very important touchdown. Who would have known, like, it would become an afterthought? Because at the time, you were like, that's the game-winning score. And I know they didn't end up trailing or tied from there, but so much other stuff happened after that. But it was a busy, busy weekend with the rest of the NFL. And yes, I do see the person was like, good for Kevin for showing up after that A&M loss. Hey.
Was it tough on you, man?
Yes, it was. I spiked a water bottle. That'd be weird. I spiked a plastic water bottle.
Off of whose head?
Just in the living room.
Oh, okay.
Off the floor.
Yeah.
Which I told Jess, I was like, sorry if that bothered you. That's probably about as muted of a response as I can have. And she's like, it's fine.
Was that after the biggest drop in A&M football history?
Yes, it was. And you know what? I'm like really fascinated by that idea. I'm going to have to go back and look through it. But that was terrible, terrible, terrible. But let's go to the rest of the NFL that was this weekend. Do you want to go Bears-Vikings, Chiefs-Panthers, or somewhere else entirely?
Yeah, let's start with the Chiefs and Panthers. That was
an interesting game. That was a big game there.
Was it?
That was a close game.
That, actually, I will not dispute. So let's go to cut number 11. The Chiefs managed to slog their way through, as they frequently do. It's 27-27 right at the end of the game, and then they get it done.
Placement is down. Schrader's kick is up. Schrader's kick is good! 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 Spencer Schrader on a 31-yard field goal, and the Chiefs walk it off with a field goal, winning 30-27.
That was an exciting ending to a game that I thought was over significantly earlier, and I was not tracking Carolina's comeback that led to the game-winning field goal. I really wasn't.
I think you've talked about this either last week or the week before, but if you look at the Chiefs, who are now 10-1, they have the sixth best plus-minus points for points against in the AFC.
That's so crazy.
Buffalo, +106. Chargers, +75. You have the Broncos in the same division, +62. Steelers, +66. Baltimore, +63. And then coming in sixth place is the Chiefs at +52. If they lose one more game, this is going to be the greatest ever, like, 15-win team to have a point differential of, like, yeah, they won their games by an average of 3 points.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, usually if you're 10-1, you would have a plus 100 on your scoreboard right now.
But I also wonder if, like, outside of the Bills game, all these close calls, they're like, yeah, we're not going to lose. Like, I know it's going to look ugly as hell, but we're not losing this game.
Detroit has the same record. What do you think their plus is, what their plus minus is for
points? I could
see
it being twice as much as Kansas City.
So Kansas City is +52 at 10-1.
I bet it's at least +104.
Detroit is +177.
Holy crap.
At 10-1.
Well, that Jacksonville game definitely helped.
Well, and the Cowboy game.
Yeah, and the Cowboy game definitely have helped. And probably.
But isn't that crazy? Two teams are 10-1. One is +177 in 11 games, and the other is +52. Man. But they're both 10-1.
That is freaking wild. By the way, Corey, this is a fair point. I think I have to concede this is a fair point. How is it tough on you, Kevin? Are you not used to this by now as an Aggie fan?
That's true.
That's fair. I got to tell the pallbearer joke to Brandon after he came home from work, and I was like, people would put in their obituary, like, I want Texas A&M to be my pallbearer so they can let me down one more time. And I always thought that was a funny bit, and somehow,
like that pallbearer.
That actually was. That was not bad. That's actually not bad at all.
Good job, Mike.
But somehow they are still in the de facto SEC like eliminator to see who will play Georgia in the championship game. So good for A&M for falling into that. I am excited, and obviously I hope they win. All right, let's go to. Do you guys want to talk anything more about Kansas City? I mean, we can talk about Travis Kelce if you like. He moved up to third in terms of all-time tight end touchdowns.
This is impressive. I was actually, my biggest interest in that was how often Pat Mahomes got pressured in that game and sacked. That was interesting to me because is that a problem for Kansas City right now that they're dealing with it? Mahomes isn't getting the protection that he typically is used to.
I think you could make that argument for sure.
They look like it looks like there's no way they're going to three-peat. But did anybody think going into the playoffs last year that team was ready to go on the road after I know the -5-degree game at home?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they're going to go on the road to the best teams in the AFC/NFL and win. And they did. And then they won the Super Bowl. So I'm like, I get it. They're not very good. Patrick Mahomes, you could argue, is having the worst year of his career.
I would, in fact, argue that.
And yet, I'm going to pick him to win the Super Bowl.
Look, I get it. And that's another thing. I know they took it down to the wire, but Patrick Mahomes wins after he loses. He's 19-4 after a loss, and they've won 13 of their last 14 after a loss. Now, of course, you can obviously get to the playoffs this year, and if you lose, that won't make a lick of difference. But no matter how good it looks, no matter how bad it looks, they win. And I did like it that Patrick Mahomes dropped in there. He goes, oh, you would like to have some blowouts in there.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, it would be nice.
It'd be nice not to have to do this every time, but there we are.
But alas, exactly. Here we are. Let's go to Chicago. So Chicago and Minnesota, this game was bananas as well because it very much looked like Chicago was done. But then we go to cut number 12. They have an opportunity to tie the game at the end of regulation.
A 48-yard try. One block today. Good snap. Good hold. Good kick. Overtime in Chicago.
And everyone is super happy and everything like that. And so I'm assuming, did they win?
Yeah, I mean, that's what should happen whenever you kick the winner in overtime.
Well, I'm afraid I've got some bad news for you. Cut number 13 will prove that they, in fact, did not win this game.
29 yards for the win. Good snap. Good hold. Good kick. And the Minnesota Vikings win it in overtime, 30-27.
They are so close to being a playoff contender.
The Bears?
Yeah. They took it to overtime. That doesn't mean that they beat Washington. They just, the 1 in 100 chance happened against them. But you look at this game and you're like, gosh, you had a great opportunity to win. I get it. They had the 17 points in the fourth quarter, so it wasn't like they were winning. And then, but I just look at the Bears and go, gosh, they are, I don't know, is it, they're going to have to look at, the Bears are going to have to look at this, and I do think this is dangerous, is you have a rookie quarterback who's having a good year. Not great, but good year.
It was on track. Sorry to jump in there, Mike. I think it was on track to be a great rookie year, if not for before this past week, the last like 4 weeks. It felt like the Hail Mary kind of broke the whole team mentally, but he was on his way to like improve.
And if you're the general manager of Chicago, you have to look at it and go, do I stay patient with my coaching staff because they're working with a rookie quarterback, a very young team? We kind of, you know, somewhat rebuilt this thing through the trading the first pick to Carolina. And I think that we have a team that can win 10 or more games next year in a very tough division. Or do you go, if I change the coach and the staff that he would obviously change if you get the, do you think that that would elevate them to the level they need to be at next
personally
year?
They're changing the coach.
I do, because just Eberflus has made some really confusing time management decisions, not this week but the 2 weeks prior to that. I'm like, I'm not saying that wins you the game, but honestly, what the hell are you doing? So I do think they move away from their coach.
And there's, I think there's more people up in the front office, we'll talk about it during the C block, by the way, who agree with that.
I wonder this. I know this gets into more like maybe Mike asking football questions. If you're Bill Belichick, and I don't know how wanted he is, he wasn't really that wanted this offseason.
Yeah, and supposedly
but we hear about the Cowboys. Yeah. What if the Bears' job is open and you have Caleb Williams? And I'm not saying Trevor Lawrence is having a horrible year. What if Jacksonville has a younger, healthier quarterback? I know the Cowboys have the fame of being, but like you just start looking at like, If Bill Belichick is wanted, does he choose the Cowboys over those situations?
That's interesting for two reasons. One, you hear Broadus talk about it consistently. The Joneses, or Stephen and Will, have to give up what they love in order to get Belichick. And control. If they don't, does Belichick want that? In Chicago, I think he could get whatever he wants up there. And because they're just begging for it, and they have everything they need.
Yeah.
You're talking about it. They got DJ Moore. They got Odunze. They got Keenan Allen. Their run game has some work. Their defense is pretty stout. They have everything they need.
Yeah.
With the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Don't worry. Plenty more football today. And remember, Buffalo Wild Wings in Addison tomorrow. And Peace-a-thon on Wednesday. Coming up next, though.
Shield your home.
Corey said in text, and I quote, "You don't have the balls to run baseball nuggets tomorrow." Mike, we're doing baseball nuggets. Where are we going?
Well, we're close to the winter meetings, and my son let me know we should be scared to death about this bullpen next.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, the segment Corey said we didn't have the guts or balls to do. It is Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bassett.
Well, we do have a major signing for the first free agent move.
Did it get done?
No. Kikuchi. He went from the Astros to the Angels on a 3-year, $63 million deal.
Mike, why'd you do it like that?
I think that's how you pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
Kikuchi.
He knows no other way to speak than the way he does.
Yeah. Kikuchi.
That's a great point.
He signed, by the way, I guess the Astros are just like, we'll find another dude who stinks at baseball and then turn him into an all-star for 3 months.
But you care about this mostly because of the relevance when it comes to the comp of Evaldi? Or
I think so.
Care?
He's okay. A little bit younger, a few years younger, but years, if you look at it, 3 for $63 might be about the market value of a Nathan Evaldi, with the idea that maybe in year three, you're not getting much out of him. I think Evaldi works his butt off, but you just don't know arm-wise. He's had a lot of arm issues.
I agree.
In today's world, you just look at pitchers and go, man, three-year deals are risky for older players. You could be paying $20-something million for a guy who can't pitch anymore because of injury. So that's the first major move, even though it's not super major. It is a major move, and it is within your division. Good news. The Astros just lost their second best pitcher going into the playoffs.
Can we take a step back about those major moves for people who miss crosstalk? You seemed irritated by the suggestion of, was it MLB.com or wherever?
Pretty much.
Soto signing is like, it could be happening any moment.
Yeah, the Soto offers are coming in this week. Yeah, whatever. Like, as soon as they're like, what's your offer? Well, Boris is going to say, I want $1 billion. And I'm not making that number up. He might say, I want $1 billion. And they're going to be like, well, we offered $600 million. What? Like, negotiations are off right now. If you want $1 billion, and I feel like that's just how it goes. Juan Soto will sign in January. I don't think he's going to even sign in December. I hope I'm wrong, because I think, you know, you have the trickle-down effect. Once the team that gets Soto is like, we're good. We just spent most of our money, I think, whoever gets him. And then the other team's like, dang, we wanted Soto, but we do have, you know, $50 to $80 million in this offseason to play with. So, there's that with Juan Soto. Kikuchi goes to the Angels. He'll get traded, I'm assuming, in July.
Because you still think the Angels are going to be straight up garbage.
I think they're
going
to lose 100 to 110 games. Okay. They're horrible. And that's not going to help. I guess it'll help in the short term, but I think that they're going to trade him for prospects. But here's where I was talking to my son about this, and it really scares you when you look at it on a piece of paper right now. The Rangers bullpen. And I know Chris Young, I'll get into it possibly tomorrow in Baseball Nuggets, sat down with Kennedy Landry and had an article, which is on Rangers.com, which was a nice article. And it talked about starting pitching. It talked about the offense, having a new hitting coach, all of these things. It's a really good article I'll get into. The one thing that it didn't address is the bullpen. And I think right now I'm scared to death about this bullpen. Let's just go over real quick who's not here as of today. Kirby Yates, who had 33 saves, was an all-star, was the best closer the Rangers have had in a decade since Joe Nathan.
Yep.
He's not here right now, and I don't know if the Rangers are going to be able to sign him. You had, a very good, reliable setup guy in David Robertson who could close a game if Yates was down. He's not coming back to the Rangers. He might just retire from baseball. I will be shocked if he comes back to the Rangers. Yates, I do think there's a possibility, but he's gone. All right, well, you have a guy like Jose Leclerc, very inconsistent. He was very hot, very cold for his whole career with the Texas Rangers. He's a free agent. He's not here. Josh Spores had off-season shoulder surgery, and he is not expected to return until, I don't know, a little bit into the season, but I think if you're the Rangers, you have to assume this. I hate saying this. Josh Spores is never going to pitch for us again. If he does, great. We cannot have a spot for Josh Spores on this team. We cannot assume he's ever going to throw a baseball again. So as an organization, hey, if he rehabs and comes back, great. We are not assuming he's going to pitch.
Yeah. See, I was looking at that a couple different ways. It sounded like the anticipation that Spores will miss the first 3 months of 2025, the calendar year. But even then, so it would make it like a minor miracle if he's ready to go for the start of the season. But if it meant first 3 months of the season, then obviously I understand what you're saying for sure.
Yeah, so I just start looking at this, and I'll start naming guys that I think will be in your bullpen next year. Left-hander Jacob Latz, who I know that he got off to a good start and then struggled as the season continued. Walter Pennington, who you traded Michael Lorenzen for, that like he had moments in his 17 innings with the Rangers. Grant Anderson, who's been an up-and-down guy his whole career.
Don't know what to expect from him.
Now I start getting into Cole Wins and Owen White. Teoto was just protected on the 40-man roster. He has a chance.
I think, I think
Mark
he does.
Church has a chance if he stays healthy.
I liked him a lot in spring training last
year. I've literally named, I guess I'll name Dane Dunning. I think Dane Dunning is a bullpen guy for you next year. I don't think he'll be in the rotation. I think he'll be built up in spring training in case you have a lot of injuries that he could start for you. But I think that he'll be like a long guy for you. I'm trying to go down this list here and go, who else is going to be in the bullpen for you? That I know Daniel Robert could compete for a spot. So literally, your bullpen might be, as of today, I don't think it'll be this. You could literally have seven league minimum guys in your bullpen, which is not good.
That is scary.
It would be great if they were all top 10 prospects in your organization. Like, I cannot believe we have seven Mason Millers. We don't.
Oh,
but like, I'm not so sure if they're going to use... I know, I think they want Rocker to be a starter. I think he showed last year in his short amount of time that he can start in the major leagues. I think Jack Leiter will be in your pen.
I do too.
But look, these guys have potential. I can't run out for the sixth, seventh, and eighth inning. I can't run out all rookies and think that I'm going to hold 1 and 3 run leads for 12 to 15 outs. I'm just not going to. It's not possible. There could be some guys that end up shining and you're like, I really like this guy and that guy. They're doing better. But the other guys have the same 8 ERA that they had last year in the major league. So I just look at this and this offseason for me, if the Rangers don't add two really nice veteran pitchers, and I say add, bring back Kirby Yates. I think you have to. I really do. I think
I'm in.
I think he might be more important when I look at this than Nathan Eovaldi. I feel like you have a little bit of cover.
He was the best player we had last year.
Yeah. Arguably, yeah.
Yeah.
And pitchers aren't going very deep into games. You need bullpen, so you got, and you want to have a dude that can do what he
especially
did at the end
late,
of the year.
He's a late inning guy, too. Like, he's not just say, hey, I'll get you over the hump. He's a late inning guy. I agree.
He closes games down.
I will say this. Looking at John Gray, I think he has to be a bullpen guy right now. As of today, because he does have the dominating slider. He's an inconsistent starting pitcher. He puts up solid numbers as a starter, so I don't want to knock him too much, but you just don't know with John Gray. He can have kind of games like, man, what has happened? And for 2 weeks, you're like, what has happened to John Gray? Then he takes a week off, and then the next 2 weeks, you're like, man, he's pitching really good. He's throwing six, 7 innings, only giving up one run and doing great. So I look at his stuff, though, the way he pitched out of the pen last year, and I'd say, as of now, we have to have somebody down there who's pitched in the major leagues more than 40 innings.
I'd be inclined to agree with that.
To help out. And you look at, you know, you have DeGrom coming back, Cody Bradford, you look at a guy like Malley, who you're really hoping can be healthy this offseason, and then in spring training, you have Rocker, who you think could possibly start, you know, and I do think in the article he talked about, we really would like to bring back Eovaldi and possibly Heaney. I don't know how possible that is, but then you just start pushing guys into your bullpen, but the Rangers, I think, really need to make a trade of using some of their maybe position assets. I'll bring this up from YouTube. If you're on YouTube right now and you brought this up last week, they asked if Josh Smith was going to play every day for the Rangers next year. And I said no. I said I think he's your great utility infielder, which you need because I'm going to assume this. This is not nice to say. I'm going to assume this. Corey Seager is going to miss 30 to 40 games. His body doesn't seem to be able to handle. He's 6'4", 230, a stud hitter, one of the best hitters in the game. But for him to play shortstop and to play approximately 145 games, his body can't do it. It's somewhat proven it can't. So I do need a dude who can play shortstop 30 to 50 games next year.
Yeah.
And then Josh Jung kind of is a half-season guy. I hope I'm totally wrong on that. So you need a dude to play 50 to 80 games at third base. So that being said, I do think Josh Smith would play a lot. That being said, if you believe that you can get something of value for Josh Smith, would his trade value be any higher than it is right now? He just won the Silver Slugger for utility. He's not going to play second, short, or third unless there's an injury, which I assume there will be on the left side of the field, multiple injuries over there. But if somebody saw Josh Smith as an everyday second baseman, that's probably his best position, then maybe you do look to – I'm not saying you should trade him, but if your bullpen is what it is today and you're struggling to sign free agents, maybe you use guys like – Josh Smith, who probably have more value today than Ezekiel Duran.
Yes.
Probably more value today than Leody Taveras. You know, a couple guys that maybe you're looking at that don't have spots on your team to play every day. And they would be like, well, we want Josh Smith over Ezekiel Duran, and you take the risk of, all right, we still have Ezekiel Duran. He's going to be our backup shortstop. He's going to be our backup third baseman. That's going to be the guy to probably play, let's just be honest, start 100 games on the left side of the field because of injury history.
I hope you're wrong. I know you hope you're wrong, but it's tough to argue that that will be the case.
I Googled Josh Smith contract, and it said 5 years for $58 million, and I was like, what? It's one for $700,000. That was the Atlanta Hawks Josh Smith.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so anyways, I'm out of time here, but if you look at the Rangers bullpen, it is literally all league minimum guys for the most part as of today, and I look at that. If that doesn't get fixed this offseason, I don't know. Even if your offense bounces back, you stay pretty healthy in your rotation, I don't think you can have 2023 again and get away with it.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. We're locker room's about to open up for the Cowboys, so we're going to switch it up just a little bit.
We're going to the locker room?
And coming up next, I mean, if Mickey wants to call in for that, that'd be great. It's time for Gridiron Gravy. Hold up. So now Daniel Jones is in demand again? Next on the Fan.